the cannibal.
I hate the cannibal.
Lurking inside my head. Seeking revenge for the expelled ones.
I hate the cannibal.
The traitors of anathema. With outlandish desire to disobey the Makura of the deceiver, Christian Svengali. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Metal Meltdown. I am your host, El Dr. Misterio. And of course, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish territory in Burnaby, British Columbia, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. Remember that you can listen to us online at cjsf.ca and also through the iOS or Android app that you can get for your smartphone. And you can also get all the podcasts, past, present, and future at cjsf.ca/contents/metal-meltdown. We just listened to Breaker. They are from Toronto in Canada. And we listened to their 2024 single, also titled Breaker. Before that, we listened to Nightfall. They are from Greece. And we listened to the song I Hate, which is part of their brand new album, Children of Eve. And we started the set with our guests tonight, Tumbleweed Dealer from Montreal, Quebec in Canada. And we listened to the song A Distant Figure in the Fog, which is part of their brand new album, Dark Green. And now let's try to please the gods of technology so that we can reach out Seb. So let's try it out. All right, we are here with Seb from Tumbleweed Dealer. How are you, Seb?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being on the show with us tonight. How's the beautiful weather over there? You're far away, far, far away.
On the other side of the country. Not very beautiful lately. We got a bit of nice weather. For a week, it got really hot, and that was just like false hope. Now it went way back down. It's gray and cold again.
There you go. Yes, we're almost there, but we're still, I think, a couple of weeks until we get proper weather.
It's our own fault for always getting that false hope. Like maybe this year winter's going to be short. Like we know it's not over in March. We have to just that one day where it's hot. We have to stop thinking, oh, that's it. It's over.
Yes. Yeah. We got teased a lot, or at least this year We got teased a lot. So for people that are new to the band, would you mind giving us a little bit of history about the band?
Sure. Tumbleweed Dealer started as a one-man project, the man being me. It was just a side project. I was sticking around with my computer, putting on drum loops and kind of just jamming over them. And it evolved from there where my jams got more and more intricate. I started writing stuff out more and more. Eventually, one of my friends heard the jams said they're pretty good, and said your drum machine sucks, but the song, the guitar playing, the bass is pretty good. So we offered to program some proper drum machines, and that ended up being the band's first EP, That Writes Outwards. And then we decided to level up and actually get a drummer. So I played the bass and the guitars, and we got Carl, who was drumming for Dope Trone back then, and he drummed on our first album. And then you got a bit busy with the band, so we recruited Jean-François Richard, who drums for Ion Dissonance, and he drummed on albums 2 and 3, and I always played all the guitars, all the bass. And now on our latest album, I recruited Angelo Batta, and the guy that I've been recording the albums with since the first one, I decided to bring him in as a band member. So he contributed some synths, some guitar lines too and stuff. I recorded all the guitars, but we wrote them together. I decided I needed to bring in people into the actual creation process. I wanted to work with other people instead of going, this is the album, you drum on it, you record it. Now, I asked like to get some feedback during and to have some writing partners so we could evolve our sound.
Interesting. Sounds interesting. Before I guess I go I guess we can go into the question right now. Like how was it for you to do that? Like how did you feel? How did it feel when you did that shift from, you know, kind of a solo, entrepreneur, or yeah, in versus, you know, the now the latest one where there's more like a collaboration.
It felt, honestly, as I was doing it, it felt horrible. It was not fun. It's not fun to relinquish power. And the reason I brought in these guys into the writing process, whereas before I just get the drummer and go like, this is the music, drum over it. The reason I did that is because I could feel that I was falling into a lot of patterns, that the songs all had a very similar structure, and the music was all about me building guitar loops on my looper. So it'd always be like, we lay down the first guitar, the second guitar, and we so forth until we have like 12 guitars. Then we keep the last two, we drop the other ones we built. So it was always these build-ups. So the whole thing had a pattern to it. So I really wanted to get out of those familiar patterns and write differently. And I think I just needed people to challenge me. And no, it was not fun, because I would show up with like a full song. I'd go like, listen, guys, I've got this 5-minute song. Let me play it for you. And then I'd finish and they'd be like, well, that one riff right there, that one's awesome. This one here's pretty good. The rest, meh. And I'm like, seriously? And they're like, yeah, let's take those two riffs and focus on them and just start from there. I'm like, and the other 4 minutes and a half, we do what? They're like, eh. And then I'm like, okay, fine. And then we record those two ones. We're like, okay, we've got a great 30-second done. I'll go home. I'll write some more. I'll come back in a week or two. Come back. I'm like, I finished the song. And then I played them, and they're like, oh, well, that first 30 seconds we did together is amazing. Then that one riff here, amazing. Then after that, so I would write like so much stuff that we would just throw out. And I needed that. It was quality control. It was breaking. Or they would just go like, from this minute on, like the whole song, you went back into your regular patterns and you can do better. And I'm like, that hurts, but it's true. So I ended up writing like 7 albums worth of stuff, because these guys would just make, and they just single in like the really one good part. And they're like, what if the whole song was this good? I'm like, oh, genius idea. I didn't think of that. Thank you very much. And I mean, it worked. So I'm happy we did it. At the end, I would listen to the album and I'm like, we leveled up because of that, because they pushed me and they pushed me. But doing it was not fun. I would not leave that place in a good mood. It was hard on the ego. It was hard on the just knowing that I had this extra work to do. And I've got a bit of an OCD where until a song is finished, it itches my brain. And I think that's why I would use familiar patterns to get it done, so I could just move on and actually sleep at night.
Yes.
So they kept me in that, like, no, nah, still not a... And at some point, the album just felt like we were assembling a pre-existing puzzle. Like, the album was out there in the astral plane, and if we just tried every variation possible, we would find it. Like, I wasn't even writing an album anymore. I was looking for it. And we're just trying stuff, and every combination of everything we tried. So he's like, what if the bass played the guitar played the keyboards, and the keyboards were a trumpet? I'm like, well, let's try it. And then we'd work for 4 hours, listen to it, and go like, nah, it was better before. And we just wasted so much time like that. But, I mean, we needed to do it to find these one or two ways where, like, it actually works this time. It's so much better, and it's so much more unique. That it was worth trying these 10 combinations that didn't work to find this 11th one that really did. Or we'd have like 4 or 5 songs done. We'd be working on song number 6 and someone would go, I'm not sure song number 2 is really as good as the... And I'm like, oh, God damn it, man. And then we re-listen to it. And I'm like, oh, you're right, man. Okay, I'll work on it. So like, it was an 8-year thing to write this album. And it was not a fun 8-year thing. Wow. It was frustrating. It was hard. But I mean, the goal was always the end, was not to have fun doing it, where I'm not someone that enjoys jamming and working on music. It's a necessity for me. I just want the end result, but the process is not fun.
All right.
It's not one of those, like, the friends you made on the way were the actual... No, no, no. I lost friends on the way to making this album.
I see. Yeah, the long and winding road. I hear you. Wow. Another question is, how did the band's name came upon?
The band's name came about, because at first, the very, very first incantations of the band, where it was just me and a drum machine and stuff, my goal was to mix everything that was like not just stoner rock, but like stoner rock, psychedelic rock, all basically all the druggy stuff, all the stuff from the 70s, all of that, and mix it with stuff that's more like spaghetti western. So I was really into Earth, Horseback, bands like that. I was actually listening to Enrico Morricone, not sure how to pronounce it, all that stuff, and I wanted to put them together. And then I just wanted the name to reflect that. So you get the tumbleweed from the western side, and then you add the dealer, because all the drug stuff, and then you end up with Tumbleweed Dealer. And I thought it was like, we're super smart for picking up of that pun. And now you can't search our name on Facebook because it says you can't buy illegal drugs on Facebook. So I kind of shot myself in the foot there. Kind of regret. I should have thought that one out more. But at that point, it was a side project. I was trying to put together another band, and I never thought this would become my main output as a composer and musician. It was never it was meant as a side thing that I did for fun, and it just grew from there.
I see. No, it's interesting. And I'm sorry about the not being able to use your name sometimes on the internet, but well.
No, that's on us. We should we sneaked in Weed Dealer into the name. We're fun. And now it says Weed Dealer, so you can't look it up on Facebook. Oh crap, that's not gonna help the sales. So that's on us. That's on us. I should have planned better. Now we're stuck with the name.
I see. Okay, let's take a little musical break. Here at the Metal Meltdown, CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Seb from Tumbleweed Dealer. Thank you. All right, we are back here at the Metal Meltdown. Yo soy el Dr. Misterio, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. And yeah, we're here with Tumbleweed Dealer, with Seb. We just listened to Moss on the Mind, of course, from Tumbleweed Dealer, and this is from their brand new album, Dark Green. And let's continue our conversation.
Have you had a chance to, like, to, I guess, tour or promote the album? What have you been doing, or do you have plans?
We don't play shows. That's one thing. We used to play shows as a trio, where I would loop the guitars, I would show my bass lines to another bassist, and we had the drummer. So for albums 2 and 3, we played a handful of shows. When we started making album number 4, that was one of the things. Like, we would work through options, and then someone would say, what about we do this? And I'm like, I can't do that with a looper. It's not possible for me to do that with a looper. And at some point, like, we had played, what, maybe, I think, 2 shows after album number 3. We played maybe, like, 10 after our second one, and, like, 2 after the third one. And then, like, our live lineup kind of fell apart. So he just looks at me. He's like, are you going to play shows? I'm like, I don't really miss it that much. He's like, okay, well, how about we just make the album and we see? I'm like, okay. And taking off that limitation of having to play it live was very freeing as a composer. Mm-hmm. But then we just really leaned into it, and we got a bunch of session musicians. Because at first it was like, okay, if I don't have to do this with a looper, then we can start like 4 guitars at the same time right at the beginning of the song. Oh, that's fun. We've never done that. But then it was like, oh, well, if we're not playing live, I've always wanted to put some keyboards and some organs. And then it just became like what I call a bucket list album, because, like, I've always wanted trumpet. I've always wanted a sec. And then we finished the album, and we're like, yeah, there's no possible way we could ever play this on stage. Even with a bunch of musicians, the guitars can sometimes they switch tuning in the middle of the riff.
Hmm.
Sometimes we would use a capo, and if the capo didn't work, we would literally have 4 hands on the guitar. I'd be tapping down on the high up, and the other guy would be like holding down the 3rd fret and then the 5th. I'm like, when I tap this note, you switch from the 3rd to the 5th. And we literally had 4 hands on the guitar. Like, we really leaned hard into the screw it. We're not going to think about the future and how we're going to play it live, where we made an album we can't play live. We just can't. There's just no way. And to make a half-assed version of it to get on stage is not something I'm interested in at all. So next album, I want to make an album that we can go back on the road and play some shows. But this one is a studio album. That's all it'll ever be. And I like thinking of it that way. It's like a piece of art that's just, it's like a painting. You're not going to get to see the painter paint.